Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 185th edition of the Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. And, of course, the chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. You have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. And ladies and gentlemen, first things first, it was only 2 weeks that the U.S. soccer referees or those assigned to the professional referee organization, PRO, it was only 2 weeks they were without a contract. Thank goodness that contract has been signed because I got to tell you, you have to say that it is a wonderful thing to have those referees are meant to officiate games from Major League Soccer, everywhere else as well, maybe also in the USL Pro League, the NASL, the NPSL, even those U.S. Adult Soccer Association games. I'm very happy and I'm very pleased that this situation has been fixed. It has been taken care of. Everything that I was fearing, and I'll be honest with you, I was fearing this because I thought a lot. I really thought this was going to drag out to a really bad, bad thing. Because it doesn't matter what sport it is. It doesn't matter if it's the professionals, the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball. The truth is Major League Soccer needed their real refs to come back. And I'm telling you right now, I am so pleased. I am so happy. I am just joyed. Overjoyed that our real officials returned to the action. They went back to work this past weekend for the third round of Major League Soccer games. I'm very excited. I'm very happy. And I really hope and pray this does not happen again. Everything needs to be taken care of. Everything needs to be done with. Everything, look, I understand negotiations are always a difficult thing. I understand negotiations can be messy, but the truth is this. We needed this to get done, and it did get done. And to those in Major League Soccer and the union of the pro referees, thank you very much for signing this deal, and thank you for returning to the pitches in every single Major League Soccer stadium in the country as well up in Canada. Thank you very much for not messing around here. I know it was only 2 weeks, but still, it was 2 weeks too long. Thank God this situation has been cleared up. Now let's get to the real story that I want to talk about tonight, and that is Julian Green. Congratulations, young man. Welcome home to your U.S. men's national team. Welcome, Julian Green. Welcome. Welcome home to your true national team. No offense to the Germans. No offense to the German Fußball national team, but you are American through and through. And to let you know, I do appreciate what you've done. And even if you did pick Germany as your national team, I probably wouldn't have been that upset anyway because, you know, let's be honest, the German national team is a talented team. It's a well-oiled machine. And, of course, they've done a lot to do these great things that has made them at least a top five, a top 10 team ranked in not just UEFA, but FIFA worldwide. So either choice was not going to be bad. But thankfully, Julian, you're going to play for your home country. Thank you for the Tampa Bay native. Thank you very much. But you know what? This situation, like every situation when it comes to the national team, to ply your trade in World Cup as well as world football, it always harks back to the days of Giuseppe Rossi. And many still feel to this day that Rossi spurned the country he was born in. He spurned the national team he should have been playing for. And while, you know, at the time, I wasn't happy about it either. I'll admit I'm a lot older now. I'm a little bit wiser now. I can definitely, you know, think about what he tried to do. And I've come to the realization that Giuseppe Rossi, who basically playing now for Italy, playing in the Italian League in Serie A, wanted to be in Azzurri, we have to take a look at that situation and revisit it. Because the anger towards Giuseppe Rossi, to be honest, is unfounded. And I'll tell you why. I read the ESPN, the magazine article a long time ago about Giuseppe Rossi and how he wanted to play in Europe. But let's not forget, his father, his mother, of course, born in Italy, came to the United States for a better life. He was born in the United States. The truth of the matter is this. It was Giuseppe Rossi's father that wanted his son to play for the Azzurri. I read that article. I forgot who wrote it. But the truth is that Giuseppe Rossi, and some of you are probably going to say, I can't believe he's saying this, but this is the truth. Giuseppe Rossi is not to be blamed for this. But at the time, and I think this still keeps going throughout Europe, the United States and their national team for soccer, football, is not that strong. It's not that good. I want you, my son, to play for the Azzurri. That's what it is. And while you would probably have other people saying, I'd rather you play for this country because we came here from the other side of the Atlantic, we want to feel like we are American. Not saying he should have gotten rid of his Italian heritage, because that's not what we're about. We are proud of who we are, proud to be an American. But as everyone knows, it's okay to be proud of the family that you've come from. It's also important to be proud of the heritage that you were born into. And to be honest, I cannot put any more fault on the head of Giuseppe Rossi nor on his shoulders. I do understand the situation was in front of him. I do understand why he wanted to play for Italy, because it wasn't his doing. He didn't all of a sudden go one day, turn on the light switch and say, that's it. I'm done playing my dreams for the United States. I don't want to play for the national team. I'm not going to do this. Bruce Arena, no, you had your chance. I'm not going to do it, even though Bruce Arena did try. And that's always the number one thing. You try to get him, and if he didn't want to be a part of it, that's fine. But the truth is simple. He did not want to be here as a member of the U.S. men's national team. And even though that name still reverberates throughout the supporters of U.S. soccer, a few places here and there, back then, it's the truth. Because there is still the belief, even though Jurgen Klinsmann is the head coach of our national team, the belief in Europe is simple. Americans can be great keepers, great defenders, great defensive midfielders, but the number one question is attacking players, strikers, attacking midfielders, playmaking midfielders. That's the big question that's still on every coach's mind in the big four of England, Germany, Italy, and Spain. Unless they were already born into their youth academies, then maybe it's going to be pretty good. But once again, we as a soccer nation, not on the supporter side of things, on the development, we need to develop these players better. We need to have these players do a much better job, and that goes down to those that are coaching these kids the right way. We cannot pick favorites. We've got to try and get them all to be fantastic players, get them ready to play for professional soccer, whether it's here in Major League Soccer, within the United States, or abroad. We have to make sure our talented players get the minutes that they deserve, that they've worked hard to prove the coaches that they are the ones to crack the starting 11 or to be the first one picked off the substitutes bench to make a difference. I think the truth is that aiming for the Premier League in England is too high. If you are an attacking player, it is too high. Go to the Championship. Go to Football League 1 or 2. Because I'm telling you guys right now, if you do well in the lower levels of European football, then those clubs will be looking for you. You do well enough to make the national team, those guys are really looking for you. You want to go straight to the top, Breck Shea. That right now is the classic example of what's going on. Breck Shea, in my opinion, even though he thought he was going to make it and they wanted him, that was a serious mistake, and he should have gone to a level or two lower. But then again, who knows? Maybe he will be able to get back on the field because Americans need to remove this tag that they can't attack and they can't score. I know what everyone's saying. Altidore right now is for Sunderland, but to me, I think Sunderland's more of a mess than Josie is. And that is the truth. Ladies and gentlemen, I got a great show for you tonight as we get ready to talk some great things here that goes on in American soccer in our country. Of course, Matt Yoder from Awful Announcing will be joining us later, talking about the national television contract with MLS and what's really going on over there with Fox and ESPN. We're going to have on Doug McIntyre from ESPN, the magazine. Sean Reed on his book, Love Thy Soccer, taped interview. Red Bull segment, we're going to review the 1-1 draw at Chicago. Patrick McDonald from the Red Bull Rant will be joining us. But on the phone first is Mr. Mr. Thad Bell who writes the SB Nation blog on the Blue Testament, I believe on Sporting Kansas City. Hello, Thad, how are you, and is that correct?
That is correct.
Well, welcome to the show for the first time. Thank you for your time. Now, Thad has an interesting article about indoor soccer. Now, I'll admit that I'm not a fan of indoor soccer. I mean, I don't mind watching it. Whatever is on, I'll take a look at it. But here is something that's very interesting. Of course, the Major Indoor Soccer League is a member, or at this particular time was a member, of the United Soccer Leagues. And apparently, the USL has shut them down. It is no longer, after this, I guess this current season, it's over. And Thad, why did the USL all of a sudden shut it down, and what were its reasons?
Well, a lot of it had to do with several of the teams were talking to the rival league, the PASL, which has really been more looked at as a kind of a lower-level arena league. But they were talking to them because there's, I guess, the core four teams, Baltimore, Kansas City, Rochester, and Syracuse, were all in talks with the teams from the PSL about what to do in the future, maybe merge, maybe come over, what to do. And basically the USL threw a little hissy fit. After the championship game, which Kansas City won, they didn't even wait a full day before they said, they issued a statement saying, yeah, we probably won't have a season this next year. They put out a little video for the Tim Holt, the president, made himself I thought he looked a little immature, and it was a poor quality video, and put that out that afternoon, and basically just kind of rained on the whole championship for the Kansas City team, and that was it. A few days later, they took the MISL off their website, and that's it. They're done for the season.
Yeah, they are done for the season. I even logged in trying to find the MISL website, and all it does is pop up the USL logo, and you know, that's really something that is just, well, I mean, you know, I gave the USL praise about trying to keep that Phoenix USL Pro side around, and even though it was changed from the Phoenix FC Wolves to the Arizona United, once again the USL showing that that it will never ever have dialogue to find a solution. It's always to find a way to say, you know what, we're going to shut it down and we're going to shut you up. And I find it really amazing, Thad, that this happened even in the MISL.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so much back history to it, and we don't really have time to cover it all, but what's amazing was because the MISL existed before the USL, and then there's been a couple of different iterations of it and half a dozen other soccer leagues, indoor soccer leagues. But it was actually these teams went to the USL saying, hey, you know, you run leagues, you can manage from the office, you know, can you help us out? And you got connections with other, you know, with outdoor teams. And it was a bunch of promise when they came in. They took it over. They bought the property. They merged, whatever term you want to use, because they all use a little bit different. But the idea was that USL would provide some stability, would bring in some teams, help them find other owners that would be interested in doing this, maybe partnering with outdoor teams. And essentially all they've done was brought in a team a year just to keep the contracts active, because there was a minimum number of teams in their contracts. And they kept bringing in just a team, and it would always be a low-quality team, poorly run, often run by the league, you know, with bad players. This year they brought in a Pennsylvania team that basically 15 years ago my indoor team, C-level indoor team, could have gave them a good run for their money. It was just kind of sad how they went about this.
Yeah, it really is. And so the one person that is very, very interesting to me all of a sudden in your article – that he basically blasted Tim Holt and the USL organization, which, of course, is Rochester Lancers owner and, of course, the original owner of the Rhinos in Rochester, Salvatore Soccer San Fantuazzo. Usually, he really defends the USL to the hilt, and now all of a sudden he's letting them have it because his Lancers are now not playing in a league.
Yeah, he. I caught him, I think, at the just the right moment when he unloaded on him, and quite honestly, it was a good 25-30 minute call where he just unloaded. I put as much of it in there as I thought I could get away with. I took out a few quotes that I thought were a little more inflammatory.
Damaging.
But I left the gist of what he said and his point in there, obviously, and he did unload on him. And it's interesting because I know he's been buds with the commissioner of the league. It fell apart really there a lot at the end. That even during the championship series, there's the commissioner almost got in a fight with the coach from the Kansas City team. There was a big fight between teams in the middle of the game, and he was in the middle of this whole fight. I mean, you're talking about a commissioner of a league. You know, maybe you should step aside and let the referees and the security handle that. But Soccer Sam, yeah, he unloaded. He's a colorful character, and I think he was probably way more serious than he ever is in his Soccer Sam persona on that call.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. That was very unusual for him, in my opinion. And boy, oh boy, I've never read anything about a person being so angry and so incensed at this whole thing. But I understand that the team that won the final MISL championship, this is your Kansas City team in Missouri, the Comets. They won the final championship, and how was that final game exciting to see?
Oh, it was very exciting. It's again, indoor being a little bit weird in how they do things, but they have a home and home series, and then a third mini game in case the home and home series is tied. So in Baltimore, they won here, they lost in Baltimore, so they went to the little mini game, a 15-minute game, and they ended up winning that 6-4. Multiple point scoring, so it was actually 3-2. But it was pretty exciting, some amazing goals and entertaining, and just a shame they didn't really get to come back and, you know, celebrate without having this whole thing hanging over them.
Now, in your opinion, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that one of the interesting things about it is the coach is Vlatko Andonoski, which is his first year as the head coach of the Comets. He was the assistant coach the last couple of years. But he's also the head coach of FC Kansas City, the women's team in the NWSL, where he won Coach of the Year last year. And he was a finalist for Coach of the Year in the indoor league this year. So it would have been a nice little doubleheader for him. But
no, absolutely. I mean, that would be fantastic for having his resume, and it's really a sad thing to see that this league has been shut down just because there was an idea coming up, and apparently the USL thought that it was going to go against them, and so what's the next best thing to do but to shut down the indoor league? And unfortunately, it's one of those things where no real dialogue was brought up, and I really feel bad for you, and I really feel bad for those that were supporting these teams in the indoor league, because it sounds like things were going well. And it just sounds like it was working.
Yeah, it's always going to be a little bit of a niche sport, or a lot of a niche sport. I mean, I don't know how many people, think back to the 80s when the Indoor Soccer League was the dominant soccer league in the United States. But, it's obviously far from that now. It can be an entertaining brand of soccer or entertaining sport. I know the soccer purists will hate it, but it's an entertaining sport that uses similar skills to outdoor soccer. And it has – those teams have, decent attendance. And as I put in the article, actually they have better attendance than the USL Pro teams on average, by far, actually. So it's amazing that they didn't want to come back and say, okay, where have we went wrong? What can we do better? And have some dialogue. But they basically said, "Oh, you want to talk to the other league? Bye." And they talk about how those owners didn't have commitment to having quality teams and quality ownership and all this. And we're talking about, Ed Hale in Baltimore, who's kept the team going for decades. The Lycans in Kansas City, who own two different teams and two different leagues, and supporting women's soccer, supporting indoor soccer, and supporting a lot of other stuff in the city. A guy like Soccer Sam has been involved in all levels of soccer. So things like that, when you say you don't have committed owners, that's just another slap in the face of these guys who have put a lot of money out there and taken a lot of risk and done this. So,
yeah, absolutely. But in your opinion, do you think if cooler heads do prevail, do you see the MISL coming back under USL management, or do you think maybe someone else is going to try and revive the league?
I think that it will not be under USL. I think there will be a league next year. My guess is that the majority of the MISL teams, six of the seven teams, throwing out the one who was basically there just to keep the numbers up, I'll say five or six of the seven teams will probably merge with the larger PASL teams, because there's teams in PSL who size-wise and talent-wise would at least compete with the MISL. Probably not as good, but San Diego Soccers, Dallas Sidekicks, a couple other ones that I'm not as familiar with are just not coming to mind. But there probably will be somewhere around a 10-team league, I'm guessing, next year, which will combine, and there will be a second division of lower-level teams who maybe, you know, there's been a lot of suggestions out there that they can try promotion relegation in indoor soccer. I don't think that's going to happen.
I apologize. I'm sorry for laughing, but that's – I'm sorry. I don't see that happening, but that's just me. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's it, trust me, it makes me laugh too, because on the day I put that article out, one of the, I didn't realize how it blew up pretty fast, and I didn't realize why. But one of the probably the best known pro rel guy out there on Twitter and all that, who is always pushing that. Actually,
I know his name. I know his name. You don't have to say it. I know.
He who shall not be named retweeted it out, and I was. You know, it's what's amazing is actually our site got more hits on that day than we did on MLS Cup Day.
Because of
him tweeting it out and other people, and you know, it was shared, you know, hundreds of times on Facebook and hundreds of retweets, and I was like, where, you know, I'm going about my normal day and thinking, you know, no big deal, it's just another little indoor soccer article that, you know, a couple thousand people would read, and all of a sudden it was like kaboom.
Yep. Whenever you gotta throw that little sucker in there, it's always gonna get a lot more noticeable because, oh, why not add that? Why not? Let's try this. Let's see if we can help our guy out, if we can mention this. So, yeah, I think it's safe to say that that's the wrong way to go, in my opinion. But then again, you never know. It's just me.
I don't think they'll have it, because I think the teams that would be in the lower division are too small. Some of them play, you know, in front of 300 people, like the low-end USL pro teams, for example. You'll have indoor teams playing in front of 300 people in, like, rec centers. And then you got the teams like the Comets and Blast and et cetera who play in arenas. Obviously, they're not going to be matching up. So,
obviously not. No, they're not going to be matching up. I guess quickly, finally, how much of an influence do you think indoor soccer is in this country right now?
I think there's still a fair amount of influence on, you know, kids and stuff, because that's, you know, I know around here in the wintertime, that's where all the kids go play. You know, my daughter's soccer team, they play a couple sessions outdoor, they play a couple sessions indoor, they take a little bit of time off, and that's their team's year, essentially. Futsal's obviously taken a big hold also, but you still have all these indoor soccer places where it's still a great chance to go out and touch the ball and have fast-paced action and learn to play in tight spaces and stuff like that. Similar reasons to playing futsal. But so I think they both still have their place. And I think indoor, I mean, like I love the sport, but I love outdoor just as equally. So it's still an entertaining sport. And if I was a wee bit younger, I'd still be in a few less injuries. I'd still be playing both myself.
Yeah, I hear you. Probably one of those great ones. So listen, thank you very much for the time, Thad. I really appreciate it. Great article, and thank you very much for sharing it with us.
All right, thanks for having me on. I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later. It's Thad Bell from the Blue Testament on SB Nation as we discuss this situation of indoor soccer, but now we move forward to the big boys. And, of course, as everyone knows, Major League Soccer did sign a brand-new national television deal, or so we thought, after this season. Joining me from the ever-popular awful announcing website is Matt Yoder, one of the top writers of that site as well. I believe you created the website, didn't you, Matt?
I did not create it, Daniel, but I'm now managing the operation. Have been since 2011. Brian Powell, the visionary of the site, AA 1.0, was there in charge from 2006 to about 2010.
Mm-hmm. So basically, this website is more about how sports announcers or the sports broadcasting stations and how you rate all the announcers, the analysts, the studio hosts, and even these contracts that are trying to be signed, like for the NFL and Major League Baseball, MLS as well, and everything. Is that correct?
That is correct. We're trying to do a little bit of everything with sports on TV and radio, any kind of sports media, whether that be in terms of sharing news, breaking a few stories of our own, insights, analysis, and always the awful announcing. We have to have some bloopers in there every once in a while just to keep everyone entertained and stay true to the core mission of the site.
That's absolutely brilliant, and thank you for being the watchdog. So,
tough job, anyway, but someone's got to do it. You know, it's exhausting,
right?
Having to watch Skip Bayless, you know, and the like that every single day. It's a tough job. I'm glad someone can fill it.
I want to slap him. Oh boy, what a schmuck. Anyway, let's not get too personal here. But, you know, I caught your article on awful announcing. By the way, it was very well done, great article. I find it interesting that throughout Twitter, even Facebook and other websites, that when the announcement came that it sounded like both ESPN and Fox Sports combined got this 8 or 9 year deal for $70 million for MLS for the national television rights, and then I see your article, and I'm like, what is going on? Because it seems like it was a done deal.
Exactly, and that's the prevailing question. That's really what led us to kind of dig into this story, is that you had the report in Sports Business Journal that ESPN Fox were going to come to an agreement with MLS. I think it was an 8-year contract, like, as you said, $70 million, and that was in January. February came along, no official announcement. Another report came about that the sides were working out contract details, and then here we are, late March, and yet still no announcement. So that led us to try and discover what is really happening here and what is taking so long to get this deal done. And as you dig into the story, there's still a lot of unknown questions that MLS, that Fox, and ESPN don't have the answers to at this time. And that's why I think, Daniel, to say out top here, everyone that we've talked to expects the deal will still be done between MLS and Fox and ESPN, that most of the terms have been agreed to, that something should be signed. Everyone at these networks expect to have some kind of MLS-US soccer package. But when you ask, okay, who's going to televise the MLS Cup? Who's going to televise US-Mexico? How are the World Cup qualifiers going to be split? Even what networks and times these games are going to be on? A lot of these details have yet to been decided, and I think that is what is causing all these questions surrounding a deal that we thought was done already. It's most of the way there, but these two sides have not yet reached the finish line.
Wow, that's really amazing. Now, obviously, reading your article, and I have it up here on my computer right now, that it sounds like Fox Sports is going to designate their number two channel to have MLS games on it all the time. Now, luckily, I'm in New York City. I'm in the tri-state area. I have the Optimum from Cablevision. I do get Fox Sports 1, and that's in high def. I get Fox Sports 2, and that's not in high def where I am. And, of course, I've been hearing, well, because that's your cable company, the one that provides you the Fox Sports 2, you're not getting the high def from them. I'm getting the high def because they have either the Dish or the DirecTV. But it sounds like Fox Sports 2 is not in every household in every single state in this country.
This is correct. Fox Sports 2 has a much less wide distribution than Fox Sports 1. And I think this is the big dilemma in these negotiations between Fox and MLS specifically. when Fox launched Fox Sports 1 in mid-August, they weren't just launching one 24/7 cable sports network. They were launching two. They rebranded Speed as Fox Sports 1. They rebranded Fuel TV as Fox Sports 2. Fox Sports 2 is in roughly 50 to 60% of the homes of Fox Sports 1. It's not in high definition everywhere. And I think, Daniel, this is the big dilemma. Fox needs to build up Fox Sports 2. They want to get to the point where Fox Sports 2 is an equal to Fox Sports 1 as ESPN 2 is an equal to Fox Sports 1. Well, with the distribution, with the lack of HD a lot of places, that's simply not the case. But Fox needs live event programming to try and build up distribution for that channel. So they look to MLS. Fox wants Fox Sports 2 to have a lot of MLS games. MLS sees the lack of distribution. They see the lack of HD, and they think, hey, we don't want any part of Fox Sports 2. Why would you want to put us on a minor league channel like that? So you really have these two competing interests here. MLS wants the primetime space on ESPN, ESPN 2, Fox Sports 1. Fox wants to put them on Fox Sports 2 to try to build them up. And let's be honest, with the ratings of MLS, maybe Fox is wise to try and go after MLS and make them a flagship sport of FS2, if you will. So I think that, to me, Daniel, is going to be a big sign of who wins these negotiations. How many MLS games are on Fox Sports 2? If it's a lot, then you'll see that Fox, I think, won out. If you have most of the MLS games on Fox Sports 1, maybe a few on Fox Sports 2, I think MLS would have held firm and won that side of the negotiations. But it represents this real fascinating point to me because you have both Fox and MLS looking to grow and looking at this deal as something that could be a foundational element for the growth of either this league or this network, and they're both competing at this point to see where these games are going to be played and televised on.
Go to the NBC Sports department on this one because, you know, this is the final year of that three-year contract with NBC Sports Network, NBC Sports as a whole, and I felt NBC did a wonderful job not only promoting the games, putting on commercials, cross-promotion with their Sunday night NFL games, of course, cross-promoting with their EPL games now that they've started to show this season. They had production at the stadiums. They had Russ Thaler there live. At the time, it was Arlo White, and then, of course, John Strong comes over. They are rotating their analysts. With Kyle Martino, Robbie Musto, Robbie Earle. Did NBC do something wrong, or is it just my imagination that MLS just decided to make a switch?
When you're looking at it, it does seem a little strange because MLS does seem like a good fit for NBC and NBCSN because we've seen what the channel can do for leagues like the NHL and like the English Premier League. And it seems like this year more than before, we've seen, you know, the cross-promotion, the EPL-MLS doubleheaders. And again, with MLS viewership, the Premier League can actually be a bounce for the league, can actually provide some new viewers to try to increase those ratings. NBC does have NASCAR coming to the fold beginning next year, so I wonder if that play to deal with just the one cable channel, if there's maybe some limited space there. And I wonder if NBC really saw the same value in these rights as ESPN and Fox did. But I think having NBC withdraw so early from the negotiations, they've already, you know, wished MLS the best in their future endeavors in a statement to Jonathan Tannenwald, I think it hurts MLS because now they don't have that second negotiating partner. They don't have that other option to bounce off of ESPN and Fox. They don't have that other point in which to negotiate against. So I think now that NBC is out of the picture, and, you know, it could be because of limited channel space. It could be maybe they didn't offer something competitive in terms of the dollars of the deal that Fox and ESPN are offering MLS. But it just seems like that it's hurt MLS, and it's part of the reason why these negotiations are taking such a painstaking period of time and why we haven't seen a resolution yet. But I agree with you. It did seem like a great fit for the network, and it's kind of puzzling to me from the outside looking in why there wasn't more interest from both sides on continuing that relationship.
Yeah, that's been really puzzling for me because I'd like to think NBC, when they do their sports department, when they are having a product, whether it's the NFL, the NHL, the NBA, the Major League Baseball, when they used to have it a long time ago, they always put a lot of care and a lot of interest into their product. Look what they're doing for the Premier League right now. And even friends of mine that do podcasts, that blog, they're blown away by the coverage that they're getting from NBC with their sports network.
Yeah, NBC's quality of the Premier League, I would put it up against, in just year one, I would put it up against NBA on TNT, ESPN's college football, Sunday Night Football on NBC. You can put production and what they do, the resources that they put in, the talent that they've hired, it is some of the best sports coverage you will see on an American network. And I think MLS fans are hoping that maybe you could get some of that for MLS, that you could put that kind of investment, that kind of resources into the league. NBC, I think they've gone halfway there. Maybe they've gone 60, 70% there. But, again, I don't think MLS can be a flagship sport for NBCSN, given what they've invested in the Premier League and the National Hockey League, the Olympics when they roll around. I agree with you that NBC does have that perception as being, you know, some of the best in quality. But again, you get into these negotiations, Daniel, and it's all about the perceived value of the property with rights fees exploding across the sport. I mean, MLS ratings have gone down, and yet they're going to get, you know, maybe double the rights fees here. I think that financially it has to make sense for both NBC and for the league, and maybe that's where these two sides couldn't come to an agreement.
Let me ask you this. In your opinion, and obviously, you know, like you said, you guys, you're the watchdog of how sports is being broadcasted in this country. Between what goes on for soccer with Fox Sports, NBC Sports, and ESPN, in your mind, you know, where or how much quality do you see out of these broadcasts from these three top sports broadcasters right now for soccer in this country?
The gold standard is certainly what ESPN did at the 2010 World Cup. They brought soccer coverage in America to a new age, and no longer did you have Dave O'Brien there. No longer did you have this kind of dumbed-down telecast and on trying to draw in fans, trying to explain the terminology. That went out the window, and it really actually started at the 2008 European Championships when you saw ESPN bring in the likes of Andy Gray and some more respected personalities. But ESPN made the conscious decision. They switched off the dumbed-down telecast, and they presented soccer as a sport the way it's presented all over the world, and they presented it to a mature audience, and that has brought in what we've seen in recent years with the advances in coverage, not just at ESPN, but at NBC and Fox, too. You know, it wasn't too long ago that Fox was rolling out Michael Strahan for football versus football segments, and it was just embarrassing. ESPN, with their coverage there, bringing in the likes of Bob Lee, Chris Fowler, Mike Tirico, they hire Roberto Martinez, they bring in Martin Tyler and Ian Dark. It brought such a professional nature to their coverage. And I'll still say, you know, what they did in South Africa was one of the best performances by a network in putting on a sporting event that I've ever seen. So I think ESPN is the gold standard. NBC has taken that challenge, and they've risen up to it. What you've seen, as we said, with the English Premier League is on that same level. It is excellent with the likes of Rebecca Lowe and Arlo White. Fox is third. That's definitely fair to say. If you look at some of the talent on air and the broadcast booth in the studio, Gus Johnson is still a work in progress. Maybe they don't have the same dynamic personalities in the studio. I do like Rob Stone, but you wonder about some of the analysts. Who is Gus Johnson's partner going to be? Ian Wright was brought in for a few games. They tried out Warren Barton. Will Eric Winalda step into that role? There's so many questions with Fox, and we just haven't seen the same world-class quality that you've seen from ESPN and NBC. And that's why I think that what we'll see from Fox eventually with the MLS deal, that's going to be a big bellwether for what they're going to do for the 2018-22 World Cup, and actually starting the 2015 Women's World Cup. You know, they've made the statement that they want to Americanize the telecast with Gus Johnson, that they want him to be their lead voice. Time will tell if they, along with that, can provide the same type of quality that ESPN and NBC have had. It's a big risk. They have a big standard to live up to. Right now, they've got an incomplete grade, and that's why I think a lot of soccer fans are going to be watching this year's Champions League MLS wants to get the right field. The Bundesliga, once that kicks into gear. And those will be the big tests on the road to the 2018 World Cup.
All right, Matt, thank you very much for the time. I really appreciate it. Keep on going strong with Awful Announcing. And if I need you again, please come back anytime you want.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Daniel.
No problem at all. Matt Yoder from Awful Announcing on the reasons of why the national TV deal has not been finalized. So it's pretty interesting to see what's going on, and hopefully the deal will be done as soon as possible. Now comes my next guest as waiting for him to come on. Let's see if we have him on now. And this is a guy that I've known for a good while. He's kooky, but he loves soccer, and that's the number one thing. From ESPN, the magazine, Doug McIntyre. Doug, how are you, and what's going on, sir?
Not too much, Danny. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Things are fine. So how is it going over at ESPN, the magazine? I've been reading your Twitter tweets and your Twitter information. How's it been going over there so far?
Yeah, everything's good. We're excited. We're excited for the World Cup like everybody else. We have a dedicated standalone issue, preview issue, which will come in handy for people during the tournament, I think, and a lot of great content in there. And of course, there'll be a preview in the magazine itself. Right before the tournament, right at the end of May, the issue comes out. So, yeah, we're excited. We're excited at ESPN like everyone else is.
That's fantastic to hear. Let's get on with the topics we're going to discuss. Obviously, Steve Cherundolo has officially retired now from active duties with Hanover. He's done with the national team, and I guess he's done all together. What type of defender was he that you saw from him back, you know, watching him whenever you're watching Bundesliga matches? And, of course, he was such a great player for the national team in some of these runs.
He really was, and I think he was underrated, Danny, and I wrote as much last week right after he retired. You know, he played right back. It's not a glamorous position, but he really was Mr. Reliable for the U.S. for a long time, and I think at the 2010 World Cup, I think he was their best player, and I'm certainly not the only one that thinks that. He was so consistent, and I think that's what you really think about when you think of Cherundolo, was how consistent he was, how few mistakes he made. And I think that it's unfortunate that an injury ended his career, because he could still play. And the U.S. team's going to miss him, I think, in Brazil this summer, because it's an inexperienced back line that they have, and he would have brought a lot of experience to it. You know, in terms of, you know, playing against the best players in the world, and just that leadership that he brought, that quiet leadership. There was a reason he was the captain of Hanover the final 4 years of his career there, and he was vice captain before that. People forget about that. So tremendously well respected by everyone you talk to within U.S. soccer, and a guy that I think maybe doesn't get the credit that he really deserves, probably in large part because of the position he plays. But I think that people are gonna see that he's gonna be missed a little bit this summer.
Now, obviously, they've qualified for the World Cup. The U.S. has a lot of question marks right now. I'd have to assume after that friendly loss against Ukraine and Cyprus, and of course, your other expert is with you too, asking for her mother. The Julian Green, of course, the big story that he has now transferred his national team rights from Germany to the USA. What have you seen from him, if you have at all, about why this kid either could be the future for Russia, or do you think, because I know he's eligible for the friendly against Mexico at Glendale where the Cardinals play, do you think he could take over a spot for this summer?
I think he's on the team this summer, Danny. I really do. I think that was something that Jurgen Klinsmann, the U.S. coach, wanted to get done. They wanted to get this kid in. He's a tremendously bright talent for the future. That's all he is at this point. And I've only seen him play a couple times. I saw his brief cameo back in November against CSKA Moscow in the Champions League. He came in for the final 3 minutes, and I saw him play a little bit in the Audi Cup in preseason for Bayern. So, but I haven't seen much of him, and no one really has. But from all indications and from people I've spoken to, he's got some real talent, and he's got some real tools. And obviously, Bayern Munich doesn't just put any 18-year-old player on the field in a Champions League match. So that says quite a bit. Bayern is easily the best team in the world this year. I think most people agree. And he's thought of very highly there by players there, by Pep Guardiola, and certainly by Jurgen Klinsmann. So I think he's got a real shot. He can play more than one position. He can play as a striker, but really he can play out wide and be a guy that can provide a spark off the bench and maybe be that guy we thought Breck Shea was going to be at this World Cup, a guy that can come in and provide some width for the U.S. So, yeah, I think he's on the team, but, you know, let's see how he does when he comes in. I certainly expect him to play in that match against Mexico, and then we'll go from there. His performances will tell the story, but at this point, I think I don't think that there would have been any rush for him to switch if he didn't really think he had a real shot of making it. I know he thinks he does, and Jurgen has said publicly that he has a shot. So you have to think that, you know, given how highly they rate him and what they think of him and what they've thought of him so far, that he has a legit chance to be part of that 23 this summer. Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, we just went through now these negotiations with Pro, and of course the Pro Referee Union. Your colleague Jeff Carl, I believe, broke the story that before this past weekend came, that the deal was finally brokered. They came back to work. Everything is all hunky dory, and it's nice. In your mind, we've never seen this in soccer, whether it's here. I don't think it's ever been done in Europe with all the referees and their respective FAs. I know the English FA referees were threatening to strike unless they got a sponsor as well, which they do have, of course. I mean, it's great to see that it only took 2 weeks to not have the real ones, but what's your feeling? I mean, I'm glad they're back.
Yeah, I think we all are glad that an agreement was reached, and it's unfortunate that the refs weren't there from the beginning of the season. You don't want to see replacement referees in any sport. Having said that, I don't know how, you know, performance-wise, I don't think you can say that there was any calls that were really, really egregious like we saw in the NFL a couple of years ago when the referees were on strike. So there was nothing like that. The referees were just as bad as they normally are. And I'm joking a little bit. Those guys do good work, but you know, but I think the standard of refereeing has to get better in MLS. Don Garber said as much. They're trying to increase the standards with the hiring of Peter Walton, the former Premier League referee. But you know, you never want to see labor disputes in sports. And what's interesting to me more than the refs is that the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement for the players, is up next year. So that's going to be really interesting. If you think back to 2010, it went right down to the last week before the season started, before they were able to hammer out an agreement, and the start of the season was in real jeopardy. And I think, you know, I think that it's going to be extremely interesting this time around, because the players look at the salaries that are being paid now to designated players like Clint Dempsey and like Michael Bradley, and they're going to want a little bit more this time around, and the owners are not going to want to give it to them, because owners never do, and that's part of negotiating. But it's going to be a little more contentious, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It wouldn't surprise me at all if there's a labor dispute between the players and management before the start of next season at all.
Now, I got to ask you this, because obviously you were on ESPN's website, whenever there was a video question, you were involved for both the USA-Mexico games at the Azteca and, of course, in Columbus. So I got to ask you this. What is it like? Because obviously we see it on TV down at the Azteca, and whenever the pilgrimage goes to Columbus for that big World Cup qualifying games between El Tri and the U.S. men's national team, what's it like to actually be in those stadiums and feeling the electricity of a possibility of a goal, a win, or a big road draw like we saw at the Azteca this past March?
Yeah, Danny, those are great games. Those are great games that I look forward to. And the best part about them is that, you know, the qualifiers are the ones. First of all, any U.S.-Mexico game is special, even a friendly. Mm-hmm. You're going to see them sell out in Phoenix. I'm quite sure they've sold almost 50,000 tickets as of a couple days ago. capacity is about 65,000 in that stadium. So you have to think that with a walk-up crowd, they're going to sell that out like they pretty much always do. I mean, U.S., Mexico, any friendly can sell out just about any NFL stadium in the country, and that's remarkable. But the qualifiers are where it's at. I mean, there's only two every 4 years, home and home. And those are big games. They're exciting. They're always, you know, it's a rivalry game, but they're also hugely important. There's only 10 qualifiers in the final round, and points are valuable. So, you know, we saw when the U.S. beat Mexico in Columbus, it ended up qualifying for them, and it really put a dent into Mexico's chances, as we saw, as they were saved, you know, the last kick almost by Graham Zuzzi in another match. It was out of their hands. But, yeah, those games are fantastic. The ones in Columbus are great. I've always enjoyed going to those games. I think I've been to the last three. But the ones at Azteca are special. It's just such a huge stadium. The history in that place, you know, two World Cup finals being played, their hand to God by Maradona. You get chills walking up the tunnel in that place and seeing the plaques of some of the teams that have played there over the years. Just a cathedral for the sport, Danny, you know, and just massive. I mean, you know, you go to, you know, first time I met you at Giant Stadium all those years ago, you go to Azteca, and it makes Giant Stadium look small. That's how big it is. So just a great place, and the fans are obviously extremely passionate. It's always interesting to see a sea of about, you know, in a sea of green, maybe about 100 or 200, and I think last time around last year it was 500 U.S. fans, which was the most they'd had, but still a tiny speck of red in the sea of green. And, the Mexican fans, they want their team to do well. They're very passionate, and I remember when Charlie Davies scored in 2009 in the qualifier there to put the U.S. up 1-0, the stadium was dead silent. 100,000 people, you could have heard a pin drop, and then, of course, they all started throwing beer at him when he did his celebration in the corner. And I remember after the final whistle last March, just about a year ago, I think it's a year tomorrow, as a matter of fact, the final whistle, I had just sent my story. I had literally just pressed send, and a beer exploded on the back of my head that had been thrown from the upper deck behind me and went all over my computer and didn't fry it, fortunately, but I was very glad I had sent the story just seconds before. So, yeah, terrific games, terrific experience, and, you know, it's always good to you know, when U.S. and Mexico meet, as they will next week.
See, this is what you got to do now. You got to go. I mean, are you? You're in New York, or you're in Bristol now? Because if you're in Bristol, you got to invade the ESPN FC set. You got to go sit on that couch. You got to go and talk with Stevie Nichol, Tommy Smith. I love Tommy, by the way. Craig Burley and Dan Thomas. You got to tell them that story about. Unless you already told them that, but I'm telling you right now, you need to be on that show.
Well, thanks, Danny. I've been fortunate to have been on it via video and on the phone a few times, and actually sat in once with them in the studio. So they're a great bunch of guys. They do a great job, by the way. That show's fantastic, and it's gotten better, and it's getting better. So they don't need any of my help, I'm quite sure, but I appreciate that, Danny. I really do.
No, they need your help, believe me. They don't know what they're talking about. No, I'm always kidding. But listen, no, but I'm being serious here. You gotta drag Burley to Red Bull Arena, because I invited him for the home opener, and he didn't show up. I'm not mad or anything, but on Twitter I invited him to come over. So if you're coming down here, you're dragging Craig Burley with you, because I want to talk to him, because he is, to me, he seems like a fun guy.
Yeah, I think he is a fun guy. I've only met him once, and certainly the person you see on camera is who he is. But great professional. He obviously was an accomplished player. Played for Scotland, of course. My family's my background is Scottish, so I've always been a fan of his. And I think, you know, he's only been here, I think, less than a year now, but he's already said that he's planning to get out to an MLS game this year. So hopefully it's at Red Bull Arena, still for me the best stadium in the league. And I hope you see him out there this year.
I hope so too, and I hope I can have a pint with him one day too. Doug, listen, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it. Anytime you want back in, you're more than welcome to join. Thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for the invite, Danny. Anytime.
All right. That's Doug McIntyre from ESPN The Magazine, covering MLS for ESPN FC as well. Great time, great guy. Saw him all the time over in Giant Stadium, a couple of times here at Red Bull Arena. But a real nice guy, very happy to have him on, and I really enjoyed it. Now, we have a taped interview with Mr. Sean Reed. Of course, remember him with I Believe in U.S. Soccer. Well, now it's Love Thy Soccer, and he's finally got his book ready. So here he is, Sean Reed.
Once again, the American Soccer Show, 4 years Dean's Fire, as we always talk about everything U.S. soccer-wise, club and country. Joining me now is a gentleman that wants you to believe in U.S. soccer, but now he's changed that to Love Thy Soccer, and that is my good friend over on the West Coast in the San Jose area, Mr. Sean Reed. Sean, thanks for coming back on, and how are you?
Great, Daniel. It's great to be back on the show.
It's great to have you back on. So now the book has become something special, the book that you've been writing on. Now it's called Love Thy Soccer. And, of course, you're doing it with Robert Jonas, of course, who runs the Centerline Soccer website. How has it been on an update? And I understand from you, I think it's close to becoming published.
Right. We've always been shooting for getting it out before the World Cup. We're shooting for a late May publication date. So if everything goes to plan, we should have that out and to people hopefully before the first ball is kicked in the opening round of the World Cup.
There you go. And, you know, you've been around a lot. Not just, I know, obviously, you can't add the Canadians in it, but probably you have now with the title change. But I will say this. What's it like to travel all over this country to visit every single club or area that gets involved with MLS, the NASL, the USL's Pro League, of course, the PDL League, the NPSL, and everything youth soccer and semi-professional soccer?
Well, it's impossible to hit every single one. I hit most of the regions that I could and talked to a lot of the clubs that I couldn't meet in person, but it just gives you an idea of how diverse and how exciting a time it is for soccer right now in the U.S. Every different market and every different level of the pyramid offers some exciting aspect to the game and its community. And it has so much enormous potential for growth. It's almost staggering to see where it was when I started writing the book in 2009 to where it's come today. It's mind-blowing. It's even changed in the last 2 years. I've had a lot of rewrites that I've had to do, which has actually been taking up most of my time this year, basically writing chapters over that I finished 2 years ago, including in New York, as we've seen. Part of the country, so it's really exciting, and I wish I, you know, could almost do this as a full-time profession, you know, traveling around and seeing every single market, every different club, and every different league. But I think even if I had all of the time in the world and the resources to do that, I still wouldn't be able to catch it all because it's growing so fast.
It really is, and you have to say, even support for the national team has really grown into just a large number of Americans that love our national team, and it's just to see them fill up. I mean, let's be honest, the snow game for the qualifier against Costa Rica at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, maybe you thought that the majority would probably not attend because of the huge snowstorm that came, but they filled up the stadium, they filled up the park, and it's just been great to see and a wonderful experience to see that game.
Yeah, that was an epic game, and it was just as much fun to watch, I think, as it would have been to be there. Of course, we would all want to be there at Dick's Sporting Goods Park for that game. Just, if nothing else, to say you were there, because obviously the quality of soccer wasn't great. But we remember those moments, the way they occur in times of extremes. The adversity you experienced down in Mexico with Azteca. Those are the things that really define an American soccer fan. Saying that you were there at those moments, being there, rain or shine, hell or high water, to support your club and your national team. And I think that that's part of what I'm trying to capture in focusing on the fan and their support of soccer in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just one of those things where, you know, even I'm still amazed and I'm still surprised to see how everything that we try to not only support this game in the country, but to see how it's been growing so fast, so quickly. It's one of those things where even I'm still surprised that it's going a long way, and then hopefully this will translate to more support coming into not just the MLS, but to all the leagues.
Yeah, I think so. I think that it is a it's like a wave almost, and it can come from anywhere. You just need a fantastic showing like the U.S. got in 2002, and you saw where it took us to 2010, and then another couple fantastic moments and comeback wins or ties in 2010's World Cup, and suddenly we have another wave crashing upon our shores from our overseas performances. And I think that the leagues, in their expansion efforts what they're doing in MLS and even down in Division IV, trying to build up some long-term viability in some of these smaller markets, it all feeds into that one big machine that is American soccer. And it develops all of us, and I think that we also develop a better experience and acumen with how to build the game further and for a longer tenured period, so that we don't just keep treading water, but we're actually building things within the pyramid rather than just constructing things that disappear after a few years. So all of that combined, the overseas work, the work that we're doing at home, it's all helping develop a more broad-based, more lasting soccer pyramid that we can all support for generations to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this. You've seen, of course, or if you did DVR, I know you're a busy guy and everything, but obviously, all three MLS sides crashed out early in the quarterfinal round of the CONCACAF Champions League. In your mind, what are the problems for MLS sides? I mean, we know what Jason Christ did for Real Salt Lake, got them into the final against Monterrey, and even though they lost by a goal on aggregate still, though, reaching the final since Salt Lake did back in, I believe it was either 2009 or 2010 or 2011, something like that, it's been a very difficult climb for this league to get over the hump. What do you think the problems are? And if it's MLS related or CONCACAF related, what do you think, or what do you see on that end?
Well, the problems are well documented, Daniel. We know this. The time in the seasons where we compete at the beginning of ours versus the middle of Mexico, and you're talking about Mexico primarily. They're the ones that are the monsters in the CONCACAF Champions League and the perennial front runners. So we have that. We have the talent level on the field. I think that man for man we can compete, but as a team, it's very difficult to adjust to the playing style and the environment that you face down in Mexico. But I will say this: we are making progress on this front. It's hard to see when we crash out, after the group stage, but we are getting to the knockout rounds. And just last year, I believe in the last iteration, we did have two teams in the quarterfinals. We had Sounders and Galaxy. So it's not going to be consistent yet, but we are consistently improving. And I even hazard a prediction in my book when I talk about Real Salt Lake, and I do talk about that horrible loss they had at home that was just backbreaking, to lose out on their home turf in that final. I think that they will be the ones that will actually carry the banner for MLS and finally win the trophy, even if Christ is no longer there. I really believe that the team there has the right motivation. The club consistently makes that tournament a priority, and I really feel like RSL will be the first one to do it. And after that, it's only a matter of time before other MLS teams follow suit, and we become just as much a force in the CONCACAF region as Mexico will be. It's just going to take time, and they are operating from a very enviable position where they have had years and years and years to develop their strength and superiority in this region, and we're still on year 19 in MLS. And so I think that we need to cut ourselves a little slack, but also be mindful of the things that we need to improve, and hopefully with the league's help and our own coaching, we can get to the point where we can consistently give them a run for their money and actually beat them on their home ground.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that day will be coming soon, hopefully this upcoming 14-15 edition. I was talking with Miss Lisa Erickson, who does both Quake Rattle and Goal and Centerline Soccer with Robert.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think we both agreed that we thought Toluca was going to destroy him and take him down really hard in the second leg. But, funny thing is, got to give Mark Watson a lot of credit, because the sides we thought were going to advance into the semis, at least, was both the Galaxy and Sporting Kansas City, but, you know, they crashed and burned really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that there's a lot to be said for that. And not only did we expect more from Sporting and from Galaxy, but the Quakes were missing a lot of people from that lineup. So it just goes to show what heart and determination, how far that will take you over what one would imagine would be some of the more glaring issues, which I even mentioned earlier, talent or the level of players that we can afford to bring in. We can actually be competitive, but it's about the approach and it's about the mindset. And I think that a lot of things, including goals that are given up in the first 5 to 10 minutes of a match, especially in a knockout phase of an international tournament, those are mental mistakes. So it's about the approach, and that doesn't cost much. Just have to be able to be dialed in,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep, exactly.
Dial yourself in and be ready to play come game day. It doesn't matter how much your players are making. As San Jose showed, you can be competitive over 120 minutes. You just have to have the right mental mindset, and that's where America has to and can improve in the near future.
You know, it's really funny. You know, we met for the first time it is 5 years ago we met, because you came over for the inaugural season of Red Bull Arena. You came over for the home opener against the Chicago Fire, even though the Red Bulls did play a friendly against Santos of Brazil, where Pele's team is. And, you know, since that time and two slices of pizza ago, you know, just keeping up on this stuff, this little information book you have written here, so many rewrites, a title change, and of course, I probably have my own chapter by now, with my own opinions about, you know, what should happen. Talk about all the different people you've met, you know, in this wonderful game called soccer, as they say in the trade, football. I see these great pictures, not just Red Bull Arena, BBVA Compass Stadium, Tony Glavin's little St. Louis Lions soccer stadium. I mean, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods Park, Kagan Stadium in Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. I mean, what's it like to, you know, meet so many different people, some probably serious, some probably strange, someone that has a strong opinion, maybe like yourself, about how the game should be run or what's going on?
It's humbling. Actually, you realize how little you know when you start to write something like this. And then when you actually meet people in person or over the phone or, you know, read what they've written, it really opens your mind a lot to different people's experiences, where they're coming from, their approach, their background, their history, their experience level. It's awe-inspiring, actually, to sit down and have a beer with Marcelo Balboa, or to speak with guys like Josh Hakala, who runs the Cup.us, you know, virtually out of, you know, the kindness of his heart and the love for the game. The book is filled with stories about people basically taking it upon themselves, like yourself, because they to basically spread the word of soccer and to throw themselves into a game or even a profession for love of the game and nothing more than that. And yes, I've talked to some professionals, and I've talked to people that are ex-professionals, people that have gone on to careers doing other things within soccer. Gwen Oxenham, who did the movie Pelada, who wrote the book Finding the Game, I was able to speak to her about what she's doing now. It's really been a very diverse group of people that I've met Hall of Famers, guys, you know, doing a podcast in their home, national stuff, regional stuff, people that are making supporter groups, people that have built soccer clubs. And I know I'm kind of taking the longabout approach to answer this question because I think it's a big one. What I felt from meeting these people, what it's like to actually meet these people either in person or, you know, over the phone or over Skype, it's really been given me a sense of perspective and wonderment and just excitement at, even from my little contribution, being counted as a part of that world, that larger soccer community. that we always talk about, how small it is. It's really big, but I think instead of saying it's small, we should say it's very tight, because once you're inside it, you're inside it, and it's a very embracive community. And I think that that's what I feel like. I feel like I'm part of a larger family because I love this game. You're contributing to it, and you're sharing with other people that have been doing the same thing. So that's what I feel like. It's like joining a bigger family.
Yeah.
Without sounding too cliche.
No, that's fine. I agree with you completely. Sean, thank you so much. And for those of you who want to get to his website, it is called lovethysoccer.com in one big word, love. T as in Tom, H as in Harry, Y as in yes, soccer.com. Sean, thank you very much for the time once again. Congratulations. Can't wait for the book to come out late this spring.
Absolutely, Daniel. And if I can just plug it really quick, we still have less than 2 weeks to go on my Indiegogo campaign. We're trying to raise some money, so that'll help with the production costs of the book. You can get a chance to get an autographed copy, an original scarf. Epic Americanness is a term that Alexi Lawless coined in one of my interviews with him. We put that on a scarf. So be the first to get that. Chip in for the book. Get it early and check out the site. I appreciate all the help I get, and really looking forward to putting this out and hearing what people have to say.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Sean.
Thanks, Daniel. Great talking to you.
That's Sean Reed, Love Thy Soccer, and when it comes out, we'll let you know when it will be out in bookstores as well as possibly Amazon. Time to review the Red Bulls 1-1 draw on the road from Toyota Park in Chicago, Bridgeview, Illinois. To join me with that, of course, Patrick McDonald from the Red Bull Rant. Pat, thanks for taking the invite, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Dan, thanks for having me on.
Not a problem at all. So 1-1 at Toyota Park, the big jinx in the history of Red Bulls and MetroStar soccer. So in your mind, how did you feel about that that 1-1 draw? You were pleased? Did you feel better about the club, or do you think it's the same old stuff?
I think overall I do feel better about the club. I mean, sure, it was disappointing to not get the 3 points on the road and finally break the jinx at Toyota Park. But I think overall the team played better. I think Pecky made some better personnel decisions, for example, leaving Bobby Convey on the bench to begin with. Dax McCarty, I think, had one of his better games this season. We've kind of been waiting for him to wake up a little bit. So overall I think it was a step in the right direction. Now it really just comes down to what they can do at home against Chivas.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really think that what we saw from the defense, I thought the defense played 10 million times better than they did in the home opener. I mean, they improved, but this was a much better performance from the defensive back line. And unfortunately, only a set piece on a corner on the near side kind of beat Robles.
Yeah. Yeah, that Robles, other than that one set piece, yeah, he really stood on his head. Sure enough, earned MLS Team of the Week honors for that.
Absolutely. Did you find it strange, like I did after the match, that Henry played more of in a midfield position role as the provider for Cahill, not having Henry up top sharing the striker duties with Cahill?
It's a little strange, sure, but he has certainly dropped back down there before when he gets impatient, so it wasn't exactly jarring to see him there, but to see it more by design, it was a little odd. That's one thing I think Petke is still, I'm scratching my head over. I think Piggy Luyendula really does offer you something there in that attacking midfield role, and if you put him in there, I think that would allow both Cahill and Henry to stay up top and give the dual scoring threat there. So that's the one move I'm still waiting for Pecky to make from the get-go, not as a late sub. Because I think even when he did come on the field, before he took one in the where the sun don't shine, he certainly offered a little bit going forward for the offense there.
Yeah, I agree. I don't understand why Pecky has not used Luyendula in a creative midfield role. I know he started up top with Cahill in the season opener in Vancouver. But I do agree with you. I think it's a bit of a question mark of why Lou Yiandula is coming off the bench. He should have at least got him to start the game behind both Henry and Cahill. But other than that, I thought it was a solid performance. And did you feel – how do you feel about Johnny Steele in this game? Because there were some that felt he wasn't doing so good in the second half. I thought he was actually had a very good game attacking when they decided to double up Lloyd Sam on the right side.
I thought he put in a Johnny Steele performance, you know, unspectacular, but, you know, high work rate, did what he needed to do. Compared to, again, I mean, I brought it up in my first comments, compared to what we've seen out of Bobby Condi, you know, to this point, I still prefer to have Steele out there, and I don't think he did anything in Chicago to warrant any exclusion from any starting lineups.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know as well as I do, every single time you feel like there's an opportunity to take the full 3 points over at Toyota Park in Bridgeview, Illinois, so a little more southwest of Chicago, there's something about that place you just don't know if you're going to get either a great performance or you're going to steal 3 points there. I mean, did you feel when Dax tied the game, did you feel that maybe they were going to steal the 3 points?
Oh, I really did. I really thought. I mean, I predicted on the Red Bull rant that the Rebels would actually pull out a 2-0 victory. I mean, that obviously went away as soon as Lorenquist scored the first goal. But after Dax scored that the equalizer, it did seem like momentum had shifted in Red Bull's favor. And I really did. I really thought they were going to make get that second goal, possibly a third, and really run away with it. I think they were the better team on the field and capable of doing it. It's unfortunate to see to be let down, but again, it's hard to complain about a point on the road. So, better luck next time, I suppose.
Yeah, better luck next time. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but we'll see. They're going to get another shot at it, obviously, later on in the year. But definitely, you know, they're gonna get an opportunity to try and get that first win in Bridgeview. Can't believe it. This is now the 11th game. The Red Bulls. The four results that went their way were draws, and of course I can't forget what happened in the it was 1-1 at the half. On the Red Bulls get a penalty and Angel converts it, but then of course a penalty went against them and it was Cuauhtemoc Blanco who converted it for Chicago, and I always felt that they got that one stolen, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, it'll come. Much like I think this year they're going to break the curse up in Gillette Field as well against New England.
Yeah.
I'm predicting it.
No, hey, go ahead. You predict as much as you want. You go right ahead. now, of course, Armando got suspended. Now, I thought I didn't know what they were looking for, and I thought Armando got suspended for the yellow card he earned, which I didn't think it was a suspendable offense. But then when you see the replay from the pregame show, it was for the accidental hi-ya to the netherworld of Deshaun Brown.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
it's one of those. You just can't run away from those at
yeah,
all.
It seems like there's a lot of that in MLS. Dempsey, Armando, I don't know what's going on.
I don't know. Well, you know, Armando, he's playing defense. He's got to try and defend his side of the field. And so, you know, the arms go out, the legs go out. You know, it's inevitable. Whoop, did we lose Pat? Oh, lost Pat there. Hopefully he'll call back and we'll continue the conversation, how he felt. And hopefully we'll get him back as soon as possible. Let's see if I can try and dial get him on the horn here. We'll see what happens. But I have to say that, you know, that is a suspendable. Oop, there he is. Lost you there for a minute. Welcome back.
I don't know what happened there.
It must have been the MLS disciplinary committee. They heard us talking about the Armando suspension. That's it. Cut him off. No, I'm kidding. But exactly. But you know, it's just one of those moments. All of a sudden, it's like, you know, going below the belt and in between the legs is a sure way of getting yourself. I don't feel like playing next week, so you can go ahead and suspend me. I'll take 2 days off. I don't care.
Exactly. It's just man code. You don't go there.
Nick, exactly. Absolutely. That's what it is. There goes the manhood. It's all over. But, boy. But anyway, as we continue on here, I know a lot of people, a lot of supporters are feeling nervous. I know, you know, your guys, Jason and Truman, you know, you're not really sure what's going on. It feels like it's, you know, it's kind of like the start that they had last year. Obviously, it was no wins, two draws, two losses in the first four games. Now it's, you're kind of halfway there, no wins, two draws, but one loss, and Chivas is coming in this coming Sunday. Are you still a bit nervous, or do you feel that they are going to be able to turn this around?
I really do think they're going to be able to turn it around. I think that consistency, we talked about it in the preseason, that consistency that's been lacking in this team is going to come through this season. And I really do. I think that this is really, and last year should teach us, like, let's, you know, take a deep breath. Opening on the road in Vancouver was not easy. Going right back out to Toyota Park was also not simple, getting kind of screwed over by the ref at home. A lot of breaks, you know, went against the Rebel Way. Of course, that's something to be expected in a salary cap league. But I do think they're going to get it. They're going to turn it around. Will it happen against Chivas? I'd say probably, despite the fact that they look a little better. But yeah, I don't think it's panic time yet by any stretch of the imagination. I think we're going to see the supporter shield caliber type of play we got used to last year ring true soon enough.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on there. I think it's going to take a little time, and it's, you know, everyone knows, you know, what's going on. Everyone knows who is doing what and how it's being done. And I agree with you. I think that everything will be just fine. You know, shouldn't really panic too much about this, and everything's going to be fine. Did you, in your preseason preview on the rant, did you predict them to recapture the Supporters Shield, or you think they're going to make the playoffs, but they will be short of the Shield department?
I think they'll make the playoffs, but just come short. You know, especially I feel extra validated every week I watch Toronto at this point and see there. I mean, I don't know if they're Shield winners, but they're certainly a whole different team. And then I think Sporting Kansas City is definitely one of those teams that could run up to the top there and grab the Shield this year. I mean, they were right on the heels of the Red Bulls last season. So, I think there's a few things that will go against the Red Bulls, but I do definitely think they'll make the playoffs and still be up in the top half of the table.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. I think that's what's going to happen as well. I think they'll be definitely in the top half of the table, and we'll see what happens going on forward. The acquisitions that you saw, Richard Eckersley, I see where everyone is concerned about Eckersley because if he blows a gasket mentally, I think then you're going to lose. You could lose him on a red card if he's not careful or get kicked out on a double yellow. But I still think that he's capable enough of doing the job. I think he can actually, when his head is screwed on right, he can definitely play a solid right back. Did you see that as well, or maybe I'm a little wrong over there?
I agree with you. I think he's that MLS player. He's that, you know, mid-level player who's adequate, and that's it. I mean, he opened season horribly, but I think he's since recovered and played nicely the last two games. It's possible you could see him costing the team with his emotions or whatnot, but I think overall he's going to be all right. He's a more than adequate replacement for Brandon Barklage.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of tough seeing Brandon Barklage not getting re-signed by the club. And, you know, we wish him well in San Jose, and hopefully he'll do well over there. You know, I have to admit, though, the big surprise for me was seeing Marcus Holgorsen getting cut just so they can save some salary cap. Calorie sap room. That would have been really terrible. But that's okay. But did you feel that was really strange seeing them cutting Holgorsen?
Yeah, no, it was. It was because he really, especially last year under Pekka Tuulinen, he managed to combine that finesse game with a new physical game, and he really became one of the most consistent defenders on the team. So it was shocking to see him go. But, I mean, that's the nature of our league, unfortunately. They said they were in cap trouble going into this season, and they've made no secret that they want to sign a designated player, and Holgorsen costs 200 grand, something like that. So
something like that.
It was shocking, but at the same time, you get it. Hopefully, with the next CBA, the cap will be raised, and these casualties won't have to happen as often as they do.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely correct, and I also agree with you as well, because while this is the final year of the current CBA for Major League Soccer and the Players Union, the real hope here is that they can find a way to maybe raise a salary cap, because right now the way things are going, it's just it's not feasible right now, and I really do hope they do find a way to get everything done the right way, because we can't keep playing this type of, I don't want to say shenanigans or anything like that, but it just looks like that it's really terrible when you think you're going to get continuity, and then all of a sudden they're gone.
Yeah, and it's not only that, it's like some of these guys are making, $30,000 a year apiece. I mean, Red Bulls, because of the high cost of living where we're at, you got three young kids sharing a house together somewhere, so they can't afford to live somewhere. So, I mean, yeah, hopefully these things can change, and not only so that these guys can have a better quality of living, but so that the league will be of higher quality and teams can afford that kind of consistency and maybe not embarrass ourselves in CCL. So that would be nice, too.
Yeah, let's not worry about that until the whole field is filled up. So, you know, I'll be honest with you. I'm hoping for the Red Bulls getting drawn with. I want them to get drawn with the Canadian champion, and there's a team in Puerto Rico called Puerto Rico FC in the Caribbean Cup tournament. I want to see them get drawn with those two. That'd be the dream, getting out of the group stage, and then you hope and pray for a good quarterfinal matchup with whoever they're going to face.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Club Leon might be in this Champions League, so there might be a chance the Rebels can take on good old Rafa Marquez.
Ah, that could be in the quarterfinals, because there will be no U.S.-Mexico matchup. It's all eight groups of three. So we won't get that. We will not have the satisfaction of facing Rafa in the group stage, but definitely we could see it in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, just don't retire, Rafa. Don't wuss out if we're going to face it.
Absolutely. Don't do that. We want some revenge. Revenge
Absolutely.
Is the dish. Absolutely. Revenge is the best dish served cold. Yeah.
Indeed.
So let me get your opinion. As we all know, this is the last year that the Red Bulls will be all alone in Major League Soccer, running New York City. Of course, the second division does not count. And I say that loosely. what's your opinion about the whole New York City FC situation? And I know most people that support the Red Bulls are not happy about it, but do you care? Do you not care? Or do you think it's a good thing or a farce?
I'm more or less in the don't care boat. I think New York City FC is going to draw fans that were never really interested in coming to Red Bull Arena to begin with. I think it's going to be, by and large, a New York-based crowd. I mean, there'll be some Northern Jersey folks that will go to that too. But I think those of us, you know, who, you know, I know we got some Brooklynites, some Southern Manhattan folk and Jersey people come out to Rebel Arena. I think for the most, by and large, they're going to stay loyal to the team. And, you know, if that's just going to, that balance is going to be maintained. So I don't think New York City FC is going to have a great impact on the Rebels. The Rebels' attendance, it might, the rivalry may very, probably will very well take off at some point, because I can tell you right now, I'm looking forward to invading Yankee Stadium or Empire City or Casino or, you know, Van Cortlandt Park, wherever they end up, I don't know, but, you know, it'll be fun to see.
They play in Van Cortlandt Park, it's over, you know that. I'm not terrible. I'm originally from the Bronx, so I know Van Cortlandt Park very well. Forget
there you
it.
Go.
It will never, ever be the same. I can guarantee you that. They go to Van Cortlandt Park, it's all over. It's done with. But, well, that's the situation we got facing us, so we'll have to wait and see. Pat, before I let you go here, tell everyone about where they can find the Red Bull Rant, websites, podcasting, everything.
Yeah, you can give the Red Bull Rant a follow on Twitter, at the Red Bull Rant, and we're also on redbullrant.blogspot.com. And if you want to hear me rant and rave about U.S. national team things and some MLS stuff, you can also follow me at yanksgomarching.com. Yanksgomarching.blogspot.com for that podcast. And then if you want none of that and just want to listen to me rant on Twitter, it's at pmacd82.
Attaboy, Patty. Thanks for taking the punishment. Good way of breaking in, and I'll talk to you next time. And by the way, just for everyone to know this, we were doing these hashtag wars on the Red Bull Rant. You probably heard of it with me and the guys, but you know what? I was thinking of this. I know it's too late. You can't be on the podcast, but there's that one song called there's that one song from One Republic.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one, All the Right Moves in All the Right Places. Did you ever hear that one?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, are you ready for this? This
I'm
is
ready.
My makeup. This is my makeup. This is for you. All the
okay.
Right Moves. Here we go. Ready? All the Right Moves and All the Right Places. So, yeah, Henri is going to take you down.
I like it. That's a good one.
You could go ahead and tell that to Jay and Truman. I don't know if you heard it or not, but you can go ahead and let them know about. That's the one I'm going to make up with you guys. So.
Beautiful. I like it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Patrick, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me up.
No problem at all. That is Mr. Patrick McDonald from the Red Bull Rant. Of course, you can listen to them doing the Red Bull Rant. So it's going to be fun, exciting, and I've been on that show that three times right now. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun, great stuff going on. And, you know, I just love being with those guys. And like I said before, look, I started, like most of you, in the stands, in the supporter section, and then just kept on going and going until I started doing this. And once again, this is a serious show. This is a very serious show talking about two things, nationally and locally, American soccer. First hour is the national hour. You go everywhere across the country, including up in Canada, even a little bit in Mexico. And then the 1 hour locally on the New York Red Bulls, because that's the team I cover. And don't forget, this coming Sunday, the Red Bulls will be home at Red Bull Arena to take on Chivas USA. Depending on what they'll be next season, that we'll find out. We will find out about that when we have the opportunity. So once again, you can check it out locally. It's on MSG, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, start time. Don't forget to see it with Shep Messing. Depending on who will be the play-by-play announcer and the color and the side analyst, of course, Shep Messing. Hopefully Steve Cangelosi will be free from devil's duty to cover the Red Bulls. And, of course, Tina Sardasio when she's not covering the Knicks. But once again, I'm glad to see the real referees returning. I'm very happy to see them coming back to doing what they should be doing. And once again, it's a wonderful thing when you have these guys doing a job that they have to do to interpret the laws of the game. That's what we're talking about here, to interpret the laws of the game, because that's what has to happen. And whether you like them or not, the point is very simple. The point is that they have to do a job. And next year, as we've talked about it, it's the players' turn at the end of the 2014 season. And you hope and pray that it's not going to be replacement players or under 23 players or under 20 academy players. Because that would be really horrible. That would really be horrible if that ever did happen. And no offense to the kids. You know, if they get an opportunity, that's fine. But it wouldn't be the real opportunity that they earned. And we don't want to go there. We just hope that everything gets settled, that we hope that all the shenanigans is going to be done with and we can move forward and, you know, cover American soccer the way it should be. And let me just say this. I want to say this right now. I understand money makes the world go round. Everything that happens in this country and any country, money makes the world go round. Because certain leagues are not profitable, we have a problem. And then it all goes down the toilet. I mean, that's as, I think that's as plain as I can make it. Because we want to see these players doing what they do best. And the truth is this. I don't want to see anyone not play for their respective sides. That's the truth. I want to see the guys go out there and do a great job. I want to see this sport grow, and I want to see this sport become the best sport in this country. I understand completely. I understand completely why these things happen. I don't have to like it, but I understand why it has to be done. Because let's be honest with ourselves here, and we have to be honest with ourselves. We're all trying to make money, making this sport big. We've gotten there. Will it reach levels like the NFL? I'll be honest with you. I don't think we're there yet. Can we achieve it? We can achieve it if certain people do their jobs the right way. If we can achieve it that way, the sport can be overtaken. But I want to be honest with everyone. There's still a long way to go. Still a long way to go. And we're not going to make it if we're going to force everything down people's throats. Just like you guys, I want the sport to do well. Just like you guys, I do want to see this sport rule the country. There are still obstacles out there. That's just the truth. because no matter what you say or I say or anyone says, there will still be problems moving forward. That's just the truth. We'll get there. I know everyone's tired of hearing me say patience is a virtue. Unfortunately, it is. Unfortunately, it is. We'll get there. I know we're going to get there. I have no doubt in my mind that the American game will be getting better. That is a fact. That's why I believe in it. That's why I believe firmly we're going to get there. But we're going to have to be patient. We're going to have to be calm. We're going to have to find a way to keep that in check. Because we go too fast. Sometimes that's good, but sometimes it's bad. And believe me, I don't want the bad to happen. I want this to be successful. And this is why I keep telling people, this is why I would like to see the Open Cup get more respect. And right now, it sounds like it might be. But we're going to have to wait and see what the situation will be. Because we don't know what's going to happen in the future for this cup competition that we love so much. I know you guys love it. I know you guys want it to be important. And we're finally seeing that. Like I've always said, more needs to be done to make the Open Cup into what it should be. More needs to be done. That's all I've ever said. That's all I ever wanted. And until that happens, we're just going to have to be a little bit more patient with everything. And we're going to have to calm down. We will be the best league in North America. It's getting there. It is getting there. There will be setbacks, but it all depends on how patient you guys are going to be. It all depends on how patient you're going to get when we reach that plateau. And like I said before, I love the game. And I want the game to be popular here in our country. It's not that hard to love this sport. That's why I do this show. That's why I care. And that's why I want you guys to follow me. Because who else has been through this? We know that there are others out there that, you know, talk about the league. They talk about everything that's going on. In the past, it was all negative. Has it finally gotten to a positive note? You'll get some that will say yes, and you'll get some that will say no. What do I think? I think we're almost there. I think we are almost there. But we have to make sure it doesn't get ruined. We have to make sure it will not be destroyed. I'm not talking about, well, overspending, because I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem right now is underspending. And having a very stringent salary cap. I'm not saying we got to blow the bank up. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is this. I'm saying we can open up the purse strings a little bit more. I'm not saying blow up the bank, like I've already said. But I think it's time. I really think it's time to start paying the players what they rightfully deserve. And I think it's time to pay the players a better wage. There's probably going to be a lot of anger from some people that will be for the league, from what I'm saying. But look, I love the sport. I want our players to go out and perform at their highest level. And no, I'm not getting back into that discussion, because I think at the moment that will not be the reason for these arguments. But the truth is the truth. We need amount of payment for a league that I think can do great things, but we're not completely there yet. When that comes, it will. Because here's my reasoning why. I feel time is on the league side. I feel American soccer has the time on their side. I really do. But if we're going to force it down everyone's throat, we could lose a big opportunity here. And if we lose that opportunity, then everything could fall apart. And that's why I am concerned. That's why I have this fear. That's why I believe that we're not ready yet to branch out. That's just my opinion. And at the same time, if it's the wrong move, it has to be said. It has to be said. Because unfortunately, there are those that don't want to hear the other side of things. And I am concerned. I'm very concerned. Like I said before, I want our leagues to be strong. I want our leagues to be confident. I want our leagues to be financially safe. Everything else can come later. Even the discussion of you-know-who. Because the truth is this. What happens if everything falls apart and it's done the wrong way? We can't have our leagues fall apart financially. We cannot allow that to happen. We can't. Do I want the mechanisms that work in other places? Yes. Of course. Of course I want it. Am I going to stand, on the line in front of MLS HQ or U.S. Soccer HQ to demand all this? No. Not. No, I'm not. Because we're not ready for it yet. We're not ready for it yet. And that's all it is, because it's called I Care. I care about what happens in our leagues. I care about what happens in our leagues. I'm wrong about it, then I'm wrong. I'm not afraid to admit that I could be wrong, unlike other people. I'm not afraid to be wrong. I'm not. Because these people, they're demanding the drastic change and to become like everyone else in the world. What happens if it falls apart? What happens if we're not ready for it? What happens out of all the antagonistic things that could come true, that it all falls apart financially? Then what's going to happen? Who are we going to blame it on? Whose fault is it if everything goes away? I know who. It's really easy to point the finger at him, but I'm not going to say his name. Because, like I've said, I want it to happen. I just don't think we're ready for it financially. That's all. I don't feel we're ready for it. More needs to be done. And when that more happens, done, like I said, I'm not going to stand in the way. Because I want to see it happen. And when the day comes and it happens, we'll stand side by side, celebrating the day that the true mechanism of this great game called football, soccer, in this country will be true, and it will be done the right way. That's how I feel. That's my belief, and I'm sticking to it because I said so. If you don't believe me, that's fine. But if you do believe me, that's fine too. Because I listen to both sides of the situation, and I am sure of myself. Because I try to merge what one side wants, what the other side wants, into the solution, and I hope it does work. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guest, Thad from the Blue Testament on SB Nation, Sporting Kansas City site. I also want to thank Matt Yoder from Awful Announcing, my good friend Doug McIntyre from ESPN, the magazine, Sean Reed on his book, Love Thy Soccer. I'll give you all the information you need. And helping me out with the Red Bull review of the 1-1 draw against Chicago, Pat McDonald from the Red Bull Rant. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. Join me this coming Monday. We've got a special guest lined up for you guys. I think you're going to like it, and you'll know about it once it's all confirmed. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for calling in, listening in, everything podcasting-wise. And as always, please, I ask of you to enjoy your football. Thank you very much. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye for now.